Good morning and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin, as usual, on Sunday morning, 9 a.m. ish UK time. And we are here again in our usual Sunday slot, our usual rhythm of bringing some kind of source to you, and then Justin and me, Lizzie, being in some kind of unfolding conversation about what the source is. So this week, Justin, you've brought this source to us, and we're going to be feeling into what it means to us and talking about it. And thank you very, very much for always having such a range of sources. I think, you know, every time you post something, it feels like a whole other world, and I'm really grateful for that. So thank you for the range that you bring.
Thanks, Lizzie. Well, thanks for being a steadfast partner in this endeavor we've been doing. Every week we add another week. It's remains the longest conversation I've ever had with anyone about anything. And thanks for being open to the things that I'm bringing. I get so excited about the things that you're bringing too. And welcome everyone to this conversation. And the tiny little bit of context, Lizzie, about this source. So it's been, as you know, Jewish New Year this last week, and there's an extraordinary book written by Rabbi Alan Liu called This Is Real and You Are Completely Unprepared, that I read every year at this time, that he wrote about this period. And it's packed with things. I have this feeling that I decided this week that I'll just bring a source from Alan Liu every year at this time of year, because I've got pages and pages and pages marked up, and this is one of them. And I've carried this with me for a long time. So I'm going to read this, and to all of you who are with us, you can find the sources. We always provide them in our Facebook group. Everyone is willing to join our Facebook group. Just search for Turning Towards Life and say hello and ask to join, and you can come right on in. And we also post them on turningtowards.life, which is the website for this project, and also with the podcast, with the notes of the podcast. It goes like this. The proximity of death, the ultimate failure, seems to open us this way. In his novel, The Idiot, Fyodor Dostoevsky wrote a thinly veiled account of the time that the Tsar played a terrible joke on Dostoevsky and his circle of revolutionary intellectual friends. The Tsar had them all arrested. And then one morning, they were awakened at dawn and told they were to be executed. As Dostoevsky rode to the execution with his friends in an open wagon, a strange sensation began to overcome him. He felt a spacious oceanic sense of time. He felt as if the limits of time had opened wide. In a few minutes, he would die, but he felt as if he had all the time in the world to do what he needed to do. What he needed to do, he now realized, was to say goodbye to his comrades for the final time. He did this in a full and leisurely way, the great love he bore for his companions welling up to the bursting point. And then he decided to spend his last moments on earth looking around at the world for the last time. As he did so, he found himself gazing at the tin roof of a nearby barn. A brilliant morning sun was shining, and a great burst of sunlight shone off the tin roof. And suddenly he knew for certain that this was what he would become. In a few minutes, he would die, and he would become this blazing, radiant light. This knowledge filled him with an ecstasy so intense, he thought that if it went on for even another minute, he wouldn't be able to bear it. And it was then that the Tsar's captain told them it was all a joke. The Tsar had only wanted to frighten them. They wouldn't die after all. Dostoevsky was changed forever by this experience. It showed him what he really was. It took him to the core of his being, and he was a different man for the rest of his life.
I'm going to read the second half of this, Justin. And then he decided to spend his last moments on earth, looking around at the world for the last time. As he did so, he found himself gazing at the tin roof of a nearby barn. A brilliant morning sun was shining, and a great burst of sunlight shone off the tin roof. Suddenly, he knew for certain that this was what he would become. In a few minutes, he would die, and he would become this blazing, radiant light. This knowledge filled him with an ecstasy so intense, he thought that if it went on for another minute, he wouldn't be able to bear it. It was then that the Tsar's captain told them that it was a joke. The Tsar had only wanted to frighten them. They wouldn't die after all. Dostoevsky was changed forever by this experience. It showed him what he really was. It took him to the core of his being, and he was a different man for the rest of his life.
Thanks for reading that, Lizzie. I realised that I wanted to bring this in because this has been a kind of life-saving bit of writing for me many times. And when the possibility that we might know ourselves as blazing, radiant light, that somehow when we're, I don't know about you, Lizzie, but when I feel small or frightened or desperate, or when I feel panicked, like I have to get something done and I'm never going to be able to get it done, or when I feel in, as I often do, sort of creeps up on me in a kind of comparison that makes my life very small, like a comparison with how other people are doing in their lives, or maybe a comparison with who I'm meant to be. I get into this all the time. I'm 51 and by now I ought to have blah, 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 whatever it is, which means I'm in a comparison with something else. Whenever any of those accounts of what it is to be a human creep up on me, and they sort of creep up and then very easily fill my life if I'm not paying very much attention, remembering Dostoevsky, catching a glimpse of the roof of the barn in the sunlight and realizing, I think what he realizes at this moment is that is what he already is. It's not just that that's what he's about to become. It's not because he thinks he's going to die, he's going to become this. He realizes that he already was this and that that's what we all are. Something vast and extraordinary and timeless and shining and not separate, that we're already that. And that in that moment, all of his, seems so extraordinary to imagine this, seemed to me that right in this moment of greatest peril, all of his worries about himself fall away, and he knows himself as a great love as well. What he wants to do is to express the love that he is in an uninhibited way. It's such a relief to me to read that and to see how wrong about myself I can be. And I'm also realizing now in the saying of it, Lizzie, is this bit occurs to me less often. So I'm now kind of working on it, deciding to work on this. That when I'm caught up in some difficulty with someone else and I'm frustrated and irritated and feel powerless and all of those kind of things, to remember that they are that too. So much of the clinging on and grasping and trying to get things exactly the way I want is so unnecessary. So it's a really relieving bit of writing for me, I think, because it feels so true.
Yeah. It's really beautiful, Justin. And as you were talking, I was thinking about the how hard it is when we're in some kind of what we're experiencing as, I think you used the word peril, you know, when we're in something that's has us panic or worry or feel, yeah, like you said, small and insignificant and powerless and all the things, it feels like I sigh a kind of relaxing breath of relief that right next to that, because this doesn't change with time or something. This is a one of those things that you could call on whenever you want it. Like, it doesn't, the light doesn't come and go. The light is the light. The radiance is the radiance. That in those moments of peril, this is also there right at the same time. That we could reach for it. We could remember. We could, in those horrible arguments that seem like they're never gonna find a way, we could remember our radiance. And it feels like it's not going to make anything go away. Like, life is still going to be life. And, you know, Dostoevsky was still on the truck. You know, the truck didn't disappear because he realized he was radiant light. But that it gives us something else to be in, some other truth to consider, to let sink in. We can let our radiance sink in those times. And as I reflect on that and what that is, I can feel myself in the reactivity, in the perilousness, kind of softening and letting my body somehow let its guard down. Somehow just my shoulders come down a little bit and my body, the armor feels like that I can feel in the perilousness of that natural kind of response to things that feel dangerous or unsafe. I can find something else in my body in that moment when I consider this radiance, and I can soften. And I think in my softness, I can see so much more. I can feel something. I think one of the qualities in me that happens when I'm in that reactivity and the perilousness is that I stop feeling. I feel consumed by kind of panic and maybe rage or angst. And then in the softening, which is invited by this radiance, the narrow me kind of starts kind of peeking open, and I can see different things, and I can remember that I love the person I'm fighting with, as well as I'm fighting with them. Or I can remember that there are so many things other than this going on in the world, and my vision and my heart feels much less contracted. And so in this moment, I'm feeling softened and really grateful. It also occurred to me, Justin, that I feel so grateful that people have written things down. That sounds really simple, but Alan Liu sat here at his desk and wrote this so that it wouldn't be lost, what he was experiencing and what he was feeling and what he could see could be a gift to all of us in the times that we need it. And you have this thing coming back every year that's a gift to you, of a reminder of your radiance. And so I feel grateful that these things get seen, these things get written about, reflected on, so that we can hang on the coattails of other people's gifts, and that other people's gifts can be present in the midst of when we can't find our own gift. We can reach for another person's gift, and that gift can help us feel softer, feel more open, feel like our horizon is a little wider than this kind of horrific place of tininess.
Such an excellent thing you just said, Lizzie, about the generosity we can be to one another by sharing our experience, by writing something down, by telling somebody something we can see, by making a YouTube video or a podcast, by having a post on social media that is generous. so that other people can benefit from their opening to one another and opening to life that we can all get into, and we can share in both the suffering and the possibility of being human. I'm so glad you said that. It resonates very strongly with something I've been wondering about in recent days, a lot that I hadn't thought about until this point in the conversation about it's one of the really simple, generous things we can do with our lives is to let them speak to others. And then we find out we can be hope for one another, and we can be remedy for one another, and we can be we can find out that we're not alone as well. And I'm grateful that we're in this conversation, and grateful of course to Alan Liu, and grateful to Fyodor Dostoevsky for bringing all of this. And I know that there have been some moments in my life when I've been in real peril, proper existential, will I make it through this, the next 10 minutes peril, and having read this was really helpful at those moments. Even if I don't make it through the next 10 minutes, Dostoevsky and Alan Liu have given me a gift of remembering what I am, a way in, another way of seeing what it is to be a life that is redeeming, I think. And your way of talking about this, that what this does is it, we've been talking a lot, Lizzie, over various weeks about parts of us and the whole of us, the self that we are. To be reminded that as well as all of the parts that we have that are desperate and protective and want a particular thing, and we've got parts that are very young and parts that get very fixated, and that it's so easy to identify ourselves with those parts. I am my anger, I am my frustration, I am my desperation, I am the comparison with something else, to keep on remembering that we are so much bigger and so much more vibrant and so much more generous. This is another thing about blazing radiant light, is that the essential nature of blazing radiant light is to shine itself generously into the world. And I think that's what we are. And when all of our contraction, when we feel past all of our contraction, I think what it is to be a life, and particularly a human life, is essentially a kind of goodness and generosity. And the difficulty that we get into is that we collapse into identifying with the smaller, more desperate parts of ourselves. And so it really helps to have ways to remember that that's not what we are, or maybe better, that that's only part of what we are. So I loved what you said about sometimes when we're caught up in a desperately painful argument with someone else, to remember that although the argument is true and it matters and there are things at stake, that there is also a shining, generous brilliance that I am and that the other person is.
Yeah.
And that makes it possible, I think, to be hopeful. I don't mean a false kind of positive thinking, everything's going to be all right kind of hope. I mean a hope in our own capacities, a hope in what might be, a hope in our being able to bring qualities to bear that could alleviate suffering and difficulty, that kind of hopefulness that Dostoevsky finds right in this moment where there's, as far as he can see, there's no way out. In a few minutes, he'll be gone. And yet he finds himself loving and hopeful, that kind of hopefulness. Which is why, to circle back to the thing that the last thing that you said, which is why talking about it and sharing about it and relating our experience to one another is so important, because we can be and hoping to one another by doing that.
Yeah, I'm feeling really affected by what you're saying, Justin, and the thing that's arising for me right now is how in any given moment there are so many things that sit right next to us that we can't necessarily see in that peril, but that it's true that they're there. And I was just imagining myself being able to hold on to some thread of radiance whilst I'm in the peril. And what happened when I imagined myself doing that as you were talking was somehow what arose was I don't have to react the same way as I've always reacted. This is like an opening of realizing that my part in whatever the peril is, and however I'm perceiving it, and whatever my identity is that's at stake, that has me argue the way I argue and fight the way I fight, or hold on the way I hold on. I don't know, somehow I could just see, oh, if this shard of radiance is here, and I'm in some way open to it, in some way remember, just like your practice of having this every year has enabled you to some way when you're like on the floor in an existential crisis and you can remember that Alan Liu exists and he wrote this line about radiance. Like even if you just remember that little thing, it's helped in some way. What arose in the understanding of that in me was that I feel like there's an opening that I don't have to play the same part I've always played. I guess somehow see that pieces of my identity being threatened and me holding on to a position, it like becomes a bit shaky, a bit like, oh, is that really true?
Mm.
It's like maybe the radiance is providing me with enough safety to question myself. And maybe the fact that radiance is makes me less clingy to being right or be about my identity, about another person's point. Like maybe it gives me a breath of time, just as he said, you know, the spacious oceanic sense of time might open up and I might see that I don't have to hang on so tightly. Like there's not as much at stake here as I thought there was, because this radiance is here. And if this is true about me, it's true about you. How can my softening, because of that, let me be a little bit softer, a little more open, a little less threatened, a little more open to your light, however it's shining right now, which might be in a really difficult way for me. And you know that thing you said about goodness, what if really this is just a massive light show? You know, we're doing our best to show each other our light. That feels like a very different, like if I sat in a conversation with someone who was in real difficulty with and had a story about them that they were just trying to show me their light, I don't know, I'd feel really gifted by that in this moment. Like, oh, things would be different when I'm fighting tooth and nail for my righteous point about something. That maybe in that softness, I can cultivate curiosity and some kind of breadth of myself that really very much disappears when I'm in that narrow, small, triggered place. So I'm really opening to this as a kind of practice of remembering. And Justin, the fact that you have this, it's like it comes around on the conveyor belt of seasons. You know, oh, look, it's Yom Kippur. Here's the thing. Oh, look, it's, I don't know what the other names of festivals or times in your calendar, but like, oh, look, it's this again. So when you speak of all those gifts that you receive on a kind of, on an annual conveyor belt of this is what you do at this time of year, it feels like a program of practice that then in the difficult times reminds us or calls to us because it got said so many times. So I'm really appreciating the nature of practice and that you don't only practice when it's hard or something, you practice because practice, and then when it is hard, the practice comes to bear. And it feels like that's what you're saying in the way that you've said how this how this source comes round and round and round. And in your, I don't know how many years you've been having this, because I think maybe when you were four, you didn't really read this kind of thing. But, you know, lots of years, given that you said you were 51, it's quite a lot of years, probably, of this coming round. And what a gift that you have support to do that, and you have community to do that with, and your own wish, and that the practice isn't just your own wish, though, it's part of something bigger. It's really beautiful.
I think I've had this book, Lizzie, for about, Alan Lee wrote this in about 2005, something like that. So I've had it probably since shortly after it was published. And it, what you're saying also makes me think about time. Very taken by what you, this language of softness that you keep bringing in, about what it is to soften. And there's this thing that happens in this piece where he says, oh yeah, Dostoevsky wrote The Execution with his friends. He felt a spacious oceanic sense of time. He felt as if the limits of time had opened wide. In a few minutes he would die, but he felt as if he had all the time in the world to do what he needed to do. And I have this growing sense that we came across this phrase in another excellent book that I'm going to bring a source from soon, that we are time. Time doesn't just happen to us. The way time is us. Which is why time has this extraordinary capacity to be, sometimes 5 minutes feels like forever, and sometimes 5 minutes goes in a flash. And if we consider the possibility that we are time, in other words, that our experience, our desperate experience of I've got to, there are times when I've got to get out of a burning building now, but there are lots and lots of other times when our sense of the desperation of time is not, it's being made by our way. So the other possibility that comes from what you were saying about, yes, it's such a gift for me to be in a life of practice that is seasonal. So Yom Kippur always comes at the same, in the same season, not exactly the same conventional calendar date. And then I get drawn back into a world of practice and language, and one part of which is this particular book, by Alan Liu. And that kind of, when we practice any kind of practice, you don't have to be part of the Jewish community's practice, the way practice time is spiral time or cyclical time, not linear time. So we pick up the practice again tomorrow, and again the day after, or again the next season, and then somehow we're back at the same time as when we last did it. And it's different to the kind of time that starts at A and then goes to B and runs out. And that is a reminder, as this piece of text is that time isn't really what we think it is. And so what if we could, what if when we feel in the narrow place that you've been talking about, what if we had ways to remind ourselves that the sense of desperation that I must do this now, or I must be that I'm not, or they must be that I'm not, that we have time, that we don't have to rush it, that we don't have to be in control of everything all the time. We don't have to be in control of ourselves all the time, and that we can breathe our way, we can soften our way into time shifting and having a different form. Mm. And practice can really help us, regular practice of almost any kind can really help us to do that. Mm. And then we're less convinced. I think this thing you've been talking about is we end up in the narrowness of ourselves, and then we're pretty sure that that is everything, and that gets us more desperate and more narrow. Mm. And like you said, what a thing it is to be able to be reminded that life is, and us and we and everyone are so much more vast and timeless than that. Mm. So I think that's what we're doing by talking every week, and that's what other people are doing with us by listening every week or often. And it's also what any of us who take on practice do, is we keep on remembering this.
Yeah. God, Dustin, I'm kind of thrown into a really big space now of so that I think one way of saying it is, so my relationship to time is born out of my relationship to life. So time and life, like what I believe about life might be what I believe about time, and then that's what time becomes. Like if I think life is limited, time is limited. If I think I am a finite something, time is a finite something. So then this radiance thing coming into time. Oh gosh, I don't even know if I have language. I think somehow time undoes me. Mm-hmm. I remember reading, like, I have these like particular points in my life where like all my structures got kind of blown apart, and I remember exactly where I was at the times. And one time I was exactly on a piece of pavement right near my house, actually, because the station here is where I used to commute, went before I lived here anyway. And I was reading, I can't remember her first name, but I think it's Audrey Niffenegger, the time traveler's wife. And because it was all about time, and it was just constantly speaking about time, somehow at some point in the book it was so confusing, and I'm a bit dyslexic, I think, so that the when time changed the whole way through the book, it just kind of kept undoing me and undoing me. And then I stopped on the pavement. I was like, time is like, we've made everything up. And I had this huge kind of panic, but a kind of beautiful panic, like an undoing panic of like looking around and kind of seeing through everything and seeing through the fact that, you know, we just made some numbers up and then we put them on things and then we lived according to the numbers we put on things. But if it's a construct, if it's a thing that we made in terms of the way we measure things, then what even is everything? And of course, there's things pass and come round and all that kind of thing, but particularly this kind of numeric sense of time suddenly got blown away. I think that's the danger of the conversation about time for me, is that it kind of feels like it blows everything up, and then I don't really have much language anymore, and I feel quite a little bit like, have you seen that film with Sandra Bullock? I think it's called Gravity, where she ends up kind of untethered from the main pod that she's attached to, and she's just going like that through space. It feels so undoing, so kind of cutting the links to my identity, I suppose. So I feel really undone by the conversation about time. And as you're talking about, I feel myself being unraveled, and how amazing to feel like the pieces of me kind of shifting so that there's space between the pieces of me, so that I can see that they're pieces of me, not who I am. And I think that's the gift and the feeling of this radiance. The radiance seems to me something I can genuinely encounter when we talk about time, because time, for some reason in my system, undoes, like to analyze and talk about time, it just undoes me. And then in the undoing, I can see all of the holes and all of the nothingness and all of the ways I've made things and constructed things. And then I can actually see them, rather than thinking that they're just, that's what I am, and I don't really think about it. It's like everything becomes visible. So I'm really excited to talk more about time, and also don't know how to talk about it at the same time.
Well, I think it seems to me that you're pointing so beautifully to ways in which we might find the gaps in the taken for granted way that we see ourselves, and the way that we know what we are, and the way that we understand what seem like obvious everyday concepts like time, to start to see that they are at best incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
Clock time and year time provide a very, very valuable function in our lives, but they're not the only way of understanding, just like our convention of understanding of ourselves is blown apart by Dostoevsky's seeing that he really is no different to the blazing radiant light shining off the top of the tin roof of the barn. And then some space can open. It's such a lovely way of talking, and a great, great place for us to end. I'm going to go into the rest of my day in the orbit of this week with this feeling of spaciousness opening. Be wonderful and terrifying as that is at the same time. So thank you, Lizzie, for always being one who can speak right into the unspeakable and can talk about what we don't have language for so beautifully and help us to have language between us. Thank you to everyone for joining us. It's time for us to go for this week, and all being well, we will be back on Sunday morning UK time next week, and you can find us in all the usual podcast and Instagram and YouTube and website places, and we'll see you then.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.